Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here and being part of this, what looks to be like a very exciting day. Let me start from, I think, what should have been true. So I think we should have been celebrating. If you look at the last two decades, it's been amazing. In a sense, if you are interested in access to education, they've been amazing decades in one sense. I mean, if you look at the record on... This is a picture which I think tells that story. You see this, I think, massive increase in school enrollment rates across the world, actually. I think now it's probably no longer true, though it was true relatively recently, that, as Jody said, that one-third of the children have not seen the inside of the schools. That's no longer true. They've seen the insides. Whether that kept them there or whether the insides were worth seeing is a different question. But it's certainly true that it's been, in some ways, an amazing period of expansion. After, I think, a lot of pessimism that based on the idea that, you know, parents are, you know, parents will never want children to go to school because children are useful in the labor market, and a bunch of, I think, theorizing by many people turned out that, you know, when you open the floodgates, people, the kids flood into the schools, and that was an, I think there's no way to read this other than to say that this is good news. Nonetheless, I think there is one sense of a certain despondency, and I think that despondency is, I think, warranted. I think one thing that happened because the enrollment problems were seen as less of a challenge, people started looking at achievement, and I think once you started looking at that, then it turned out that the children weren't exactly learning a lot. So this is a survey I'll mention several times. This is the annual survey of education report. It's a survey carried out in India. It's a nationally representative survey, actually carried out by this NGO Pratham. It's a kind of an amazing survey in the sense that it's done by volunteers every year across the 540 out of 590 districts in India or something. So it's quite an amazing survey. And unfortunately, what came out when the survey was done was something that I guess we should have known but had not. And that was that 59% of fourth graders and 44% of fifth graders read below second grade level. 76% of fourth graders and 63% of fifth graders can't do simple division. So those numbers were, I think, when they were read first, were seen as shocking. We're getting inured to them, unfortunately, in a sense. But Pakistan, I also mentioned this report again. This is the LEAPS report that the World Bank did in Pakistan. It's an excellent, it's only for Punjab in Pakistan, but it's an excellent report that the World Bank did on, again, the state of education and the state of education infrastructure in Pakistan, and very similar results. You sort of realize that one thing that was not partitioned was the education system. Somehow there's an amazing uniformity in these results. And then more recently, there is a similar set of results from Kenya that was done as a part of the work of our lab. And I think what is emerging, I think, is that these numbers are probably, and I think we are getting to the point where we think that we'll find very similar numbers in many places, that we'll find that less than half the children are at, of fourth and fifth graders at a second grade level in either reading or math. I think that's something like that we'll find in many places, I guess. So I think that sort of put a pall over the excitement over that came from the fact that people were coming into school in large numbers. So what I'm going to do in the rest of the talk is I will mostly, mention some facts, mostly based on work that we've done in Poverty Action Lab, and then towards the end, kind of go from there to a set of hypotheses and then perhaps a set of thoughts on what should be the next steps. So I think the basic debate is simple and well known, which is that is it unreceptive students, unmotivated children, ill-prepared to learn? I think that these are all well-founded questions. I mean, you know, there's certainly evidence of long-term damage. We were talking about early childhood yesterday, and there are people who claim that, you know, by the time you're 5, you're done, you're finished, if you haven't got the right nutrients and the right encouragement before. Or is it inadequate teachers, poor pedagogy, whole set of issues which, again, have been widely documented? There's nothing new here in this. So what do we know about children? Well, I think there is some evidence of low child and parent motive, if you look at ASAR, the child attendance is 70%. Now, that number, since a lot of the schools are one-child schools and one-teacher schools, and many of these schools have teacher attendance of less than 70%, now this is 70% on the days when the teacher showed up. So that's 70% of 70%. Less than 50%. So that's not quite right, because the kids probably know when the teacher won't show up. But nonetheless, there is something to be frightened about. So, but child attendance in numbers, and this is again another number you'll find across the world. I think this is another number that's emerging. Children don't go to school, and I think even more than teachers. So if you look at the child attendance rates, they're lower than that of the teachers typically, and that's a fact to be taken seriously. Now, but it seems to me that that doesn't mean that children intrinsically are unprepared for school or unprepared for or unmotivated. I think a fact that I think we'll imagine in a minute, or we've already actually mentioned, I think if you are you are someone who can't read and you're in fifth grade, it's very hard to feel motivated to come to school. It's like it's basically accepting to be humiliated day after day, sitting in a classroom where you understand nothing of what's going on. And I think I don't think this is evidence of lack of child motivation, given that this is the fact that these kids really are in no position to get anything out of the classroom. It's not surprising that they don't want to come. So here's a result of some experiments, a randomized field trial we did in Jaunpur. This is an area where child attendance is 50%. So 15% of children aged 7 to 14 couldn't recognize a letter. 39% could read at grade 1 level. So this is worse than the Indian average, actually. It gets depressing to keep seeing these numbers. Well, so 65 randomly chosen villagers, Pratham, which is the NGO that does that survey, ASAR, recruited volunteers through information of and discussion of learning levels. So they went to the villages and they basically met with a bunch of parents and other people in the village, and they discussed, you know, the state of education in the villages. And a bunch of volunteers showed up. About 8 volunteers per village showed up. These volunteers are typically people who have a high school education, been given a week's training. So this is all. These are people not. These are not specialist teachers by any means, and they conducted evening camp. Now, camp is a funny word because this is stuff that's happening. Just, you know, this is very small groups of people being taught just about anywhere they could find a space and some light. And the results are stunning. So this is 2 months of teaching. We measure them a year later. So this is not teaching right then. So it could be anywhere up to 10 months after this happened. And 10 months later, you find that children who could not read anything at baseline who attended camp were 60 percentage points more able to read letters. If you could read letters but not words, then you were more likely to be 26 percentage points. So if you basically, what this means is that if you add to the natural progress over a year, this means 100% who attended could read letters after 1 year, and 35% who could do letters could now read stories. So those are massive changes, suggesting that there's nothing intrinsically impossible about educating these children. They're not that demotivated or they're not that debilitated that they couldn't be taught. It's something else that's going wrong. And what's going wrong really is, I think, in this fact that given this, what's striking is only 8% and 13% of those who could not read attended camp. So very few children actually given this opportunity, given the mobilization. Did parents know there was a problem? Pratham did an extensive campaign in each of these villages, testing a large fraction of the children, teaching parents how to test the children, sharing the testing tools with the children, sharing the results, having a whole village meetings, many, many individual meetings. So parents were told that this was the state of education in the villages. Nevertheless, only 8% of the children showed up. In other words, the problem isn't somehow at the level of when the child gets to the class can he be taught, but rather at the level of does the child get to this special additional class. Now, what is also remarkable is when you give them the parents these results, and this goes to building, story that eventually I want to come back to, they didn't do anything else either. What's remarkable, we tried to measure all kinds of sort of collective action that parents could have taken. So that is zero. And this is we have a large enough sample that we can actually get very precise zeros. Zero change in the number of times they complain to the school system. Zero changes in to the number of times they shift children to a better school. So you get all this information. You find out that your children are doing really badly, and at the parental level, no action is taken. And this is true in the villages where the camps were, where you might say, well, they were sending them to the camps. But nothing happens in the villages where there were no camps. So there's no parental reaction to this fact that the learning levels are what they are was almost entirely absent. This same fact has been now found again in Pakistan, where there is a part of this LEAPS project. Villages where parents were given what are called village report cards, which were report cards in all the schools in the village, which school is doing better there. And whether this report card was reliable or not is hard to say, but what is clear is that their children, the parents didn't react to this information whatsoever. They didn't shift any of their children. One way of thinking about what could be going on here is that parents see education as a gamble with long odds. So I think this is a fact that we've encountered many times, which is that parents seem to have a theory which says that if my child is smart, he will make it, otherwise too bad. And that seems to be at the core of their reaction. That they seem to. What's interesting is that, of course, in some ways this works out. It has interesting consequences. And there's evidence from Pakistan that parents have very strong views on, whether their children are smart or not. And if the children are the child they pick to be smart, whether even if she's a girl, they'll send to a private school. over the less smart boy. So you see this very strong evidence, actually, that parents are discriminating within the family based on the theory of who's smart. I think the word, and so I think one of the things that is, I think, so if you like, they're happy to give education a shot, but they start from an extremely essentialist view of a child's capacity. And so I think that so children are, there are only a small fraction of children who would sink or swim, and most people will sink. So their view is, let's focus on the ones who can swim. And those people essentially, and I think that might be actually warranted given the way the schools function, because schools also function under a similar assumption. So I think people have documented high absence rates. This is these are numbers across the world. Teachers don't show up. This is a known fact. And it's true. What is true is that absence is a serious problem. It's true that you find that there was a randomized trial of using cameras to monitor teacher presence in a set of NGO schools. Absence dropped by 42% to 21%. Test scores went up by 0.2 standard deviations. The question is, so that there was some incentive effect. So one thing you might say is that, what's the point of sending these children to school if the teachers don't have that much incentive? But I think if you want to actually look into the, so one way to benchmark the effect of these incentives is to look at private schools. So if you look at private schools, there's lots of self-selection, obviously, though less than you might imagine, because private schools are very cheap. There's $1 a month private schools all over South Asia. But basically what can you do? You can try to use what are family fixed effects. So you can say that, I'm going to compare the child in the family who went to private school with the child who didn't. But that's always problematic, because you might imagine that the family is deciding based on which child is more motivated or smart. And I'm going to go faster or summarize. Basically, the effect is about the same size as the effect of this incentives given to teachers to attend. So 0.2 standard deviations was what they found. Private schools have an effect of 0.3 standard deviations. This is the effect of sending, they're trying to interpret this as the effect of sending the same child to private school. This is probably an overestimate, because there's still self-selection in this. So this is comparable to Rajasthan. But if you look at one of what a different fact that we know is that there has been a series of interventions, some of which we've evaluated, which are much more mundane, which are not sending to changing incentives, they're not changing sending children to private schools. They're just adding a high school educated teacher's aide with a week's training. Pratham did this program in Mumbai and Vadodara, and they found that the improvement in test scores was 1 standard deviation. And that order of magnitude, which is much bigger than the effect of private schools, is a fact that keeps coming back. We've done a series of evaluations, each of which has the same fact, which is that, you get much bigger gains than the gains from sending a child to private school by doing a targeted intervention which actually moves, identifies what the child's weakness is and tries to deal with that. So gives specialized attention to the child. And I think if you see that fact, in other words, private school teaching is much less effective, at least in improving the performance of the weakest children, than these often brief interventions by motivated but poorly trained teachers. So these teachers we're talking about are high school educated. They're trained for a week. They're sent to teach these children, and you get huge effects. So somehow there's something that's very strange here, which is, you have these much better educated, much better incentivized private school teachers who can't deliver nearly as much as these volunteers who are trained by an NGO for a week. and who have themselves maybe a high school education. So that's sort of a, so if you look at the, so there's the parent side of the story, which we, the child side of the story, and this is the teacher side of the story. So let's, I want to just go back to now thinking of what's going on here. So I think that first conclusion that you have to, that I think it's evident, is that somehow the pedagogy is grossly inappropriate here. I think it's based, the reason is that, and I think you talk to teachers, is very obvious, is based on covering material rather than generating learning. You ask the teacher, what did you do? He said, I covered this. And you ask them, why did you cover that? How many children understand that? That's not their problem. Their problem is to cover the material. So you have a, and in that setting, it actually makes perfect sense for the parents to have the, given, I think the parents are right in believing that it's a lottery where, unless your child is really smart, they will just fail because, you know, you have to keep up with this huge barrage of material that gets thrown on them without any additional support. So the parents are right in believing it's a lottery, and unless your child is extraordinarily motivated, they won't survive. So I think they might be right in believing it's a lottery. And I think all of this is driven by the fact that there is really... the view is that the goal of all of this is to get to the point where you can clear some public exam. So I think the system actually makes sense. So everybody believes that the objective of the system is to clear a public exam. I'm almost done. The objective is to clear a public exam. Therefore, everybody believes that very few of the children can clear that public exam. Therefore, everybody is colluding on essentially focusing on those few children in class who have the intrinsic motivation for whatever reason to actually get there. So the parents focus on those people, the teachers focus on those people, and since parents believe that their children are quote-unquote stupid, they're not actually willing to make any other investment. They're fine to, you know, try the lottery if they can sink or swim, but they're not willing to push it any further, not willing to go and complain that the teacher is not doing their job, because they feel that, you know, teacher is actually trying, you know, my child is just not so worth investing in. And I think that collusion is what keeps the system going. So it's all sides are colluding on this one theory, which is that most children are stupid. And I think that's at the heart of the problem. Since there is no other assessment of performance than this public exam, it's hard to know that your children are not learning, and therefore, essentially, everybody is colluding on the assumption that your children have. So let me, in my negative 2 minutes, let me... So one thing that you have to do is, think of changing pedagogy. I think you have to focus on integrating interventions that are targeted towards bringing children up to speed within, and this is not a this is no great insight, but it isn't one that the system has systematically failed to do and is continuing to fail to do, and this is what Pratham is trying to do all over India. I think there's some evidence that tracking might help. There's a nice study in Kenya. The reason why it would help is that since teachers are completely focused on covering material, if you give them a heterogeneous group, they go as fast as they can. If you make the group more homogeneous, then they can't go that fast, and that might actually help the weaker children. That seems to be the evidence. I think one has to change incentives, but change incentives in a different sense than the usual conversation. Usual conversation about changing incentives is private schools. I think there's without getting into that debate, I think there's an entirely different issue, which is how do you get teachers to focus on the weaker children, which is not so much to do with, I think right now everybody is agreed on the view that the teacher should try and take your talented child and get her or him through the public exam. Finally, I think there's a very important need to change parental perceptions. I think here's one last set of trials I'll talk about. Trials, there were trials in Dominican Republic and Madagascar that gave parents information on the average returns to education. So emphasizing this is the return on the average child. You don't have to, so trying to explain exactly this idea that average children benefit from education. You don't have to be a superstar to benefit from education. And I think if you look at that, the gains are bigger than the gains to private schooling. You know, this is the order of magnitude, at least the same order of magnitude. We're talking a 0.4 standard deviation just from, like, one afternoon, get parents together, tell them this is the returns to education. The children attendance goes up. So these orders of magnitude somehow don't fit this. So mostly what I want to say is that I think there is a need for, I think, rethinking this world of education. I think in asking where you know, not, I think we are right now very focused on questions like questions of incentives, questions of infrastructure. I think it's worth going back and thinking why these incentives don't work better than they do. And in some ways, I think going back and I think thinking about how to get everybody more excited about education and in believing more in their children's capacity might give us the biggest returns.